This call is being recorded.
All right, welcome everybody to our first of five weekly sales labs that we're doing through the end of this year. You can hear the voice of Carol Mahoney speaking. I am joined by my cohort and partner in crime, Mr. Rick Roberge. Rick, are you there still?
Hello, y'all. Yes, I am.
All right, great. So we've got some more people that are kind of wandering in. We are recording this, and we are going to try and keep as much of the identifiable information anonymous as possible, because everyone who has sent it in to us. So we will just use first names, and I will try to leave out names of companies. So we actually have, I think, one, two, three, four scenarios to talk about today. So without too much further ado, we're going to dive right into it. And the first one we actually had sent in to us a few weeks ago by a young woman. And I'm going to just read what she sent in to us, and then I'll have Rick sort of give his comment on it first, and then I'm going to chime in after that. Sound good to you, Rick?
All right. We can try it.
Let's give it a shot. So Corey wrote to us, and she said, basically, how do I give a better demo that's interesting to the prospect? And what she wrote was, a prospect requests a demo, the rep gets excited about it and books a time with their sales engineer. Discovery is not requested or done prior to the demo. The demo is 60 minutes long. 12 minutes of that is the account rep presenting slides. The focus of the slides is us versus them, i.e. look at how great we are, look at all we do. Nothing really tailored to the prospect's goals. The demo is generic, it's feature-focused, it does not speak to the audience's specific goals. At the end of the 60 minutes, the presenters ask for 10 more minutes, after which the rep uses 5 of those minutes to wrap up. By this time, the decision-maker is long gone, as are a few other attendees. During the session, the rep and sales engineer often interrupts and asks the SE to show X, Y, or Z, some of which the SE is not prepared to show. They're obviously out of sync. How do we go about showing a unified approach, provide a focused message that resonates with the prospect, and appear prepared and professional versus your typical salesy? It almost sounds like she's answered her own question, Rick, but I'm going to let you answer her first.
I'm echoing. Carol, turn off your speakers.
Okay.
Is that this better? Yes, no echo. Okay. So, The answer to this particular question actually sometimes takes 3 months to teach. Okay, so the issue is that the salesperson needs to be leading this. And the first thing that matters is that they need to understand the issue that the prospect is trying to solve by buying their product, potentially buying their product. It's not about the features and the benefits of the product. It's whether or not it will solve the problem. Best person to decide whether or not it's going to solve the issue is probably going to be the salesperson and the sales engineer after they understand what's going on in the prospect's world. So I would want to flip this around. I don't know why a discovery call was skipped here, maybe because it wasn't requested, but all you really have to do is say, can we get on the phone for a few minutes so I can ask a couple of questions so I could tailor this demo to exactly what it is that you're trying to do. If you do that, they'll often say, okay, a few minutes, a few questions. Yes, I'll try that. And then you're going to want to present a demo that speaks specifically to what it is that they're trying to do and not show all the gizmos and gadgets that your product or software or service can do. That's good. Let me leave it there. Carol?
Thanks, Rick. So a lot of times we come up against this too with clients that we're talking to, and it doesn't always have to be a call that happens before the actual call. A lot of this can also be done through email, asking simple questions, sharing content, and asking each person who's going to be attending this, if you know in advance, what is it that you would like to see? What is it that you would like to get done? So that you can start to compile a list of things that everybody wants to see. And then you can start asking questions of which of these is most important? Why is that most important? And the demo doesn't become a one-way conversation. It actually becomes a two-way, three-way, or four-way conversation that starts even before you walk into the room. So that by the time you actually sit down for the meeting, everyone who's there knows what's going to be talked about. You can reiterate and reconfirm why is this important, who is it important to, what happens if this doesn't get fixed kinds of questions. All right. So I think we're going to move on to our next. And if there's any questions that anyone has, feel free to type that into the chat pane. And if you want to, we can also probably unmute you if we need to get any clarification if you're the one who sent in this particular scenario. All right. So we're going to move on to our next scenario, which is a prospecting email. And this was sent in to us. I'm going to read the email. We'll talk a little bit about what's good and or bad about the email and what we should do instead of. Because the person who sent this into us basically said, I'm not really getting any response to this. I'm not sure what it is that I'm doing wrong. So I'm going to start it off. Hi, David. I left you a voicemail message to set up a brief call to learn more about your newspaper, find out what challenges you face on a daily basis, and talk about a possible partnership. Newspaper Toolbox is a service designed specifically for newspaper sales teams. Here is a short video on our company that will help you get a better idea of the services we offer and how they can help you achieve your sales goals for the year to come. Click on the following link to review our December flipbook. I understand that this week is short due to Thanksgiving and early deadlines. It would be my pleasure to help you and the sales team target your needs so that Toolbox can become an indispensable resource for insert newspaper name. Would it be possible to set up a brief call a day next week? I'm Eastern Time. Please advise. Thanks. Rick, you want to start off?
No. You do it.
All right. So we see a lot of these kinds of emails that go out. We see a lot of people who either ignore them, and in some cases even will call them out as and say, you know, these are the kinds of emails that don't get responses. So I'm going to actually start with the first part of the email. I left you a voicemail to set up a brief call to learn more about your newspaper, find out what challenges you face, and talk about a possible partnership. That is a whole lot of things in one sentence. And it's probably too big of a step to be taking on the first initial contact with someone. You've left them a voicemail. I'm not sure what the voicemail said, so that's another part of this. But depending on how this person has come across your radar, if there's some reason that you're reaching out to them, maybe they downloaded something on the website or you came across their name through a common connection on LinkedIn, the first email that you send to them shouldn't be a pitch. It really needs to be more focused on them and something that they may be interested in. So the thing that was okay about this email was that there was a piece of information. I'm not sure what the flipbook is, but if it's not something that's, I guess, a piece of content that's going to be interesting to something in their role, it's probably not going to be clicked on. And it's also buried after three sentences that talk all about something that we want to offer you, something that we want to do for you. And it's really more focused on us. I left you a voicemail. I want to learn more about you. I want to learn about what challenges you face. I want to talk about a possible partnership. Instead, we need to make it about them. I understand that this was a short week due to Thanksgiving and early deadlines. Here's the thing. We don't even know if they're working this week. And actually, Rick wrote a blog post. We had a client that used this and actually got some purchase orders and sales by simply sending an email that says, are you working this week? And you may have even seen me use it if you got one of the emails from me lately as well. And that's really just the question. Are you working this week? Are you in the office? Are things going to be happening? If they reply, then you can start engaging with them based off of that reply. If they don't reply, then next time you reach out to them, ask them, are they back in the office? Have they caught up from the Thanksgiving hassle and email inbox? Then the last part of the email, trying to set up a brief call. And I understand that as salespeople, that's what we're kind of measured by a lot of times is whether or not we've set up appointments. But at this point in this first email, we've already pitched them too much, and so they've already tuned us out. What possible value do you think it is that they're going to get by meeting with you? So my advice for this email is probably cut out almost half of everything here and just have a simple thing that says, just left you a voicemail, and depending again on what the voicemail said, I came across this article, thought it might be interesting to you, or are you working this week? And rather than asking for them to set up another call, asking something, not that. It's too big of a step. You haven't earned the right to ask for their time yet. Rick, anything to add? Doesn't sound like Rick has anything to add. All right, any questions, let us know in the chat pane. We're gonna move on.
Hold it. I'm sorry, I was talking and I was muted. It didn't work. The reason that I didn't want to talk first is because I didn't want to say scrap the whole email. But now I just have to say scrap the other half. There's a couple of blog posts that Carol will send out to everybody that's attending. One of them is an article that I wrote for a marketing blog in Australia called Baby Steps. And one of them is on Carol's blog that she wrote, that's the rules of cross-examination. We assume it, actually, let me give you an example, and hopefully nobody will be offended by Rick right now. Guy walks into a bar, walks right up to a girl and says, "Hey, want to hop in the sack?" Not appropriate. Too big a step, too fast. So you just don't do that stuff. You smile, you maybe you wink, you say hi, ask if you come to this place often, first time here, that kind of stuff. You make a little small talk, you take baby steps. You don't go right for the kill. And I think that this email, we asked a lot of questions that we haven't had established the basis to ask. We haven't earned the right yet. So what I would probably do with this, depending on where I source the email, if I got it off of LinkedIn, I might say something like, "Hi, David, I was surfing LinkedIn, landed on your profile, and thought it might be appropriate to reach out. Have we crossed paths before?" Or see if there's a common connection, ask about the common connection. Or okay, so that's LinkedIn. If they filled out a form, ask them a question based on something in the form. If they fill out, if it looks like they're in Indianapolis, ask them, "Are you actually in Indianapolis, or are you calling from a, or are you listed as a, do you use a Indianapolis address and your remote?" So if you can't think of anything else, when you leave the voicemail, which is what this person did, "I left you a voicemail message." How about this one? "I left you a voicemail message, realized I forgot to leave my phone number. Here it is. Can you give me a call?" Done. So just think about doing a lot less. Take many more steps, smaller steps. You'll have a lot more success here. Was I gentle enough there, Carol?
You were very gentle. I'll give everyone one more example of actually a prospecting email it's not even a template. It's more of a prospecting technique, and email just happens to be the form of it. A lot of times I will have people who look at my LinkedIn profile as an example, and I'll send them some variation of, "Hey, I saw that you looked in my profile. What brought you by?" One example happened recently where someone looked at my profile. We had a lot of connections in common. She was actually the business partner of someone that I knew very well, and I didn't even know that she had a business partner. And so I sent her an email and I said, "I saw that you were on my profile. And when I saw all of the people that we had in common, it was a wonder to me how we haven't crossed paths before." And then I asked, "Are you going to the XYZ event this week? Maybe we'll actually meet in person." And it started over the course of the last week, Thanksgiving week, mind you, I think at least now 8 to 9 different emails that have gone back and forth between her and I. And now we know so much about each other, we're almost asking, "Well, what is it that we're going to talk about when we actually meet?" So that's an example of a good technique for prospecting. Now, you can do it on LinkedIn, you can do it through regular email, you can do it on the phone, you can do it on social media, you can do it at networking events. Okay, so let's move on to our next scenario. I'm actually going to skip the one that I had for number 3, and we'll see if we have time for it at the end, because we don't have a lot of details here, but I think it's something we can probably address in a general sense. But specifically, and this is something that a lot of people actually said and had questions about, is how to ask for referrals. And I think it's probably something that's on a lot of people's minds this time of year, because you're sending thank you cards, you're getting together with clients and past clients. It's kind of seems to be the time of year that everybody thinks about reconnecting with people. So, and actually, Rick, you had someone actually send you an email asking specifically this, which spurned a blog post, which we'll send everybody as a follow-up. But how do we ask for referrals without having to ask for referrals? And what I think we can really actually talk about is how do we customize the way we ask for a referral from one industry to the next? And there's a basic process and script that both Rick and I use for this. And actually, if anyone here is reading Anthony Iannaro's book right now, he talks about this a little bit as well, where he talks about maintaining the relationships that you have. Rick and I have called this, our ABC list of 200. And so, and Rick, I'll have you talk about the formula, but really what this is looking at all of the list of people that you know and have contact with, and who is it that you would put underneath the category of A? These are people that you want to have frequent contact with, either because they're a past customer, they've sent you referrals in the past, maybe they have good connections of people that you know, maybe they are someone that you've worked with in the past that's been a very good mentor for you. Those are the kinds of people you want to have frequent contact with, maybe once a week, every other week, either a call or an email or something. Then you have your B list, and you can imagine how this goes. These may be people that you want to contact maybe a little bit less frequently, maybe once a month, and these might be people of you've contacted them, they were on your A list, but they haven't really been very responsive, so maybe you'll put them onto the B list, or maybe they're second degree connections of people that you want to meet. And then C is your types of customers or clients where maybe you contact them once a quarter, and depending on the level, and these A, Bs, and Cs, they fluctuate. So some people may be in A, some people may be in B, some people may be in C. But if you listen to the formula that Rick uses, it allows you to contact a lot of people if you have a daily, weekly discipline of who am I going to be contacting today. So Rick, do you want to talk about the formula a little bit, and then we'll talk about the process of how to actually stay in touch and ask for referrals without asking? Make sure you're not on mute.
And why is it that I have to talk about the formula? Is it because you're such a math whiz?
No, because I'm not.
So if you apply the Pareto principle, which is better known as the 80-20 rule. 80% of your business is going to come from 20% of your customers. If you're dealing with a list of 200, that's 400. 20% of 200 is 40. Follow the math, write it down. So we got 40 people that are A customers that I want to talk to every week. Because remember, if they're my A customer, they're my competitor's A prospect. Then I have another 20% that are my B customers. They're not as important, so I don't want to talk to them every single week, but I do want to talk to them once a month. 40 customers in the B's, 40 B's, that's 10 a week, 10 B customers a week plus the 40. Now I have to make 50 calls a week, okay? Keep the math. And then now I've got C customers. C customers, there are 200 and there's 120 left. If I want to talk to them once a quarter, 12 weeks and a quarter, that's 10 a week. 10 C customers a week, 10 B customers a week, and 40 A customers a week, that's 60 calls. I used to spend the first hour every day of every weekday, my working days, calling 12 customers a day, 60 a week, 40 A's, 10 B's, 10 C's, and I never lost touch of them. Now, I'll tell you that 10 out of the 12 were voicemails. So how long does it take to leave a voicemail message? And I'm going to leave a relevant voicemail message. Hey, Carol, read your article today. Looked great. I shared it. Or, hey, John, saw you were in the news. Congratulations. And I'm just going to touch them on a weekly basis. When I talk to them, I'm gonna be looking for, I'm gonna check and see. And now this goes back to the blog post that I wrote. This process, it needs to be non-salesy. As a matter of fact, it almost needs to be customer servicey. So I want to ask them if what they did, if what we did last time, for instance, if you're a home remodeler and you installed a new kitchen, you're going to say, "Hey, are all the doors working? Are all the drawers sliding good? Is the easy close good? Any paint chips?" That you're going to ask questions about making sure that they're happy with their stuff. If you're helping them with marketing, you might ask them, "How's the traffic going? How'd you do with that blog post that you wanted to write last week?" You're actually checking on them to find out if they're happy with your relationship. Then this is where the referral process starts. Now we're going to ask them, "So have you shown off at all? Has anybody come over and seen your kitchen and said, 'Boy, this is really nice'? Or have you bragged to anybody that maybe at your Rotary Club or Chamber of Commerce that you got a new website and it's really humming?" And if they say yes, as a matter of fact, do you remember who was it? What did they say? And you're having a conversation now. And then you're going to ask them, and you have to have a hook. "Do you think that they would like to get my new ebook on how to make your website hum, or how things you can do to rejuvenate your kitchen, or how to make repairs in your kitchen?" If you've got something that you can share like that, your customer will say, "Yes, that would help out my friend a lot." And now you just got an introduction to a person that saw their kitchen, liked it. And the way that conversation is going to start out when I have it is going to be something like, "Hey, I was talking with Carol the other day, and she mentioned how you walked in and you liked her kitchen. Did you pick a favorite piece about it? Because she really put some time into it." And you can have a conversation with that person that will probably lead to a sales conversation.
All
Carol, is
right.
that close enough?
That's pretty good. So there's a couple of things
Okay.
too that I just wanted to add. Rick gave some examples of like a home remodeler, and this definitely applies to the technology space as well, because if you are, as we talked about in the very beginning when we were talking about setting up the demo, if you have an idea of what each person who's involved in that sale and what's important to them, ask them, is it performing as you thought it would? How did the implementation go? How could it be better? And one of the other questions that I really like to ask customers that have just either signed on or as you're having the relationship that most salespeople don't think to ask, but is invaluable information, is what problem did we help you solve that you didn't expect? So I'll give you an example. When I ran a marketing agency, the task that I had was to help them to develop more leads that their salespeople could call on. But one of the unexpected things that he found is that by implementing some of the procedures and processes and things that we did in working with the sales team, that they actually started to become even more efficient, and they actually started to expand the business because of that, and they became more profitable. Those were all things that he didn't expect that hiring me was going to happen, and if I hadn't asked, would have never heard. The other thing is asking anyone, and actually we've had a client before do this, go to a trade show where one of his clients was showing off a case study that involved them. I mean, this is the best way to have anybody say, "Hey, how did you do that?" and get any compliments. And so it was a great spot for him to go to get referrals and develop some more relationships. And then, do you know anyone else who is suffering from the same problem or who would like to have the same kinds of results? Are questions that you can ask anybody who is involved in the sale with you. And I'll say one last thing and we'll wrap up with this because we're at the 30-minute mark here, is if you don't have a referral mindset, it's going to be very difficult for you to ask for referrals. And this is what I mean. If you haven't referred someone else for something else, it's kind of like the giver's gain attitude that they talk about in networking events. that if you're not willing to introduce other people, it's going to be very difficult for you to get introductions from other people. So you have to have a referral mindset in the first place in order to actually start to get referrals yourself. Because someone who gives a referral simply because you know someone who's going to help someone else, that's going to be something that's going to be remembered later on. Call it karma or call it what you will, but you have to have the same mindset that you're trying to you do something in. All right, so if there are no questions from the audience, I'm going to wrap us up. Rick, anything that you'd like to close us out with?
Nope, I'm good. I think that the last point that you made, I think one of the things that I see is that sometimes we tell people to do as we say, not as we do. And I think that that's one of the big things that goes along with Carol's last point. If you're not giving referrals, then why should you get any? Who cares? However, if you do make referrals, what winds up happening is you become a resource for people, and it will help you. What will wind up happening is people will send their friends to you, not because they think you can help them, but because you know everybody, and you could probably steer them in the right direction. And sometimes you're going to wind up steering them to yourself. Okay, so give to get.
It kind of goes back to the running theme that I think we have going on here. Actually, there's two running themes that I see through all of these scenarios. And one is that it's not about you. It's not about you, your product, your service. And if you think it is, it's going to come reflected through in your emails. It's going to come reflected through in the demos that you do. It's going to be reflected in asking for a referral. And I think the other part of it as well is it's not what you sell, it's how you sell. It's who you are as a salesperson that determines whether or not you're going to differentiate yourself, whether buyers are going to value your insights. And so it's not about you. And I think that's just the other key thing that we see here. So thanks for everyone who has sent in scenarios. We did have one scenario we didn't get to, which I think we'll try and put in for next week if we can get some more details on it. So if you have this link, save it for next week at the same time, same bat channel. Thank you, everybody.